Let's go ahead and move on to our next panel of the day. We're going to be talking about from competition to collaboration to co-creation, looking at how banks and fintechs can work together to build really cool things. Our moderator for this panel is Mr. Phil Goldfeder, returning to the stage. We just can't get enough of him, of the American Fintech Council. Joining Phil, we have Christy Hahn of Canopy Ventures, Kirosh Adalparvar of Silicon Valley Bank / First Citizens Bank, and Isabella Barbieri of Plaid. I'll go ahead and let you all come out here and get settled. Phil, good to see you. It's been, 3 seconds off stage.
It's been fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to take it
away. All right, over to you. Take it away.
Thank you so much. Again, I need no introduction. My fame is far-reaching, so I appreciate you continuing to humor me. Changing it up a little bit, I thought I was in the hot seat on the last one, excited to put some other folks in the hot seat right now. And so with that, we'll start right here to introduce yourself. Where do you work? What you do? And I'm going to make it a little twist. You know, what keeps you up at night?
Oh, what keeps me up at night? A lot of things. First thing, this baby, because I'm 36 weeks pregnant, and so we might be, you know, my goal for the day is to just leave the...
through the day.
Yeah, exactly. I'm Christy Hahn. I'm with Canopy Ventures. We're a venture capital fund focused on fintech and AI, and it's really because our LPs, so our investors, are 70-plus banks and finserves. Our core expertise really lies within financial services. I've been there for a couple of years now, very excited to look at a lot of AI companies these days. What keeps me up at night is very much this baby. So I'll leave it at that.
We'll allow that. Yeah. And for those in the room, she's the one with the money, so find her after the panel.
Wonderful. My name is Kirosh Adalparvar. I lead the payment partnerships team at SVB, which is a division of First Citizens. And if you've read the news, we're now going to be First Citizens Innovation Bank. So we're all very excited about that change. Listen, I started my career off in payments. I started off advising clients, you know, all the way from startups, maybe 5 to 10 people, all the way to public companies. And I had to listen to what their pain points were. And then I advised solutions and even implemented some of those solutions. So for me, I've been accustomed to hearing what the pain points are for clients. And then fast forward to today at, SVB, we've kind of sit in this interesting ecosystem where we bank not only investors, the founders, and then the customers that the actual founders sell to. And so my job really is to manage this natural ecosystem to create more structure and commercialize it. I've been very thankful to be in this space. And I think probably what keeps me up at night is compliance, making sure that who we partner with is adhering to the right compliance requirements.
Good answer. Good answer.
Nice to meet everyone. I'm Isabella Barbieri and I work at Plaid. My role is in basically focused on payment partnerships for Plaid. So any partner that is powering our payments products, I broker the deal and I'll also manage them on an ongoing basis. So that translates to me working with a lot of sponsor banks, as well as some other vendors. And then my background has been in, you know, various fintech partnership roles. I kind of bring maybe more of an operator lens because I've been a partnership manager in many different forms for a lot of years. So I'm excited to speak very transparently today. And I would say what keeps me up at night is, well, in my day to day, usually something banking related because I work with a lot of banks. And then transparently, AI is keeping me up lately. I'm a little nervous about where that's going, but yeah, I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, we've taken a survey. 125% of the companies here at Finovate are in AI, about 125%. Kirosh, I'm going to start with you. As the CEO of the American Fintech Council, we recognize the value of the bank and the fintech partnership. I think there was once a time where, you know, the thought was fintechs are going to displace banks or they're going to push them out. And it was either fintechs were going to be successful or banks were going to be successful. What we built was exciting to put everybody under the same roof. You know, I just mentioned a few minutes ago about 25% of our membership is actually innovative banks in addition to the other 75%, which are fintech companies of all kinds. So how has that shifted, right? That's really what we're here to talk about. Like, how is the idea that we're stronger together? And then talk to me about how that ultimately impacts the consumer.
Yeah, I think you need to have a true embrace of partnerships. And I remember I lived through that time where it was like, are we frenemies? Like, what's the vibe going on, right? And I think for me, you need to add and create value early on very quickly. And for me, that was focusing in on pain points. You have to identify within your institution where there might be a gap. And it's kind of changing that mentality to a needs-first approach. I'm actually so thankful Plaid's on the panel, because I can give an example. About 4 or 5 years ago, we had two needs that we needed to solve for. First was our clients needed account aggregation services because of a NACHA rule. And then the second was I started to see all these payment processors that was basically taking revenue away from us because they were processing at other institutions. But they were all integrating with these data aggregators. So I asked myself the questions, like, why can't we partner with a data aggregator? Like, why can't we partner with Plaid? And so we did. We were the first financial institution to actually have that token integration where we take Plaid tokens and we integrate with our ACH API. And I think that's a perfect example of, like, I didn't have a budget to build this. I didn't have resources to do this. And I'm not a specialist in data aggregation. They are. They're well known in market. Our clients are already using them. So why can't we test this thesis out, have a quick solve, right, to what our clients need, fulfill those needs, and then long-term evaluate what we want to make a strategic investment in. And I'm happy to say the partnership is still thriving today. We're still using it. And I think that's how you build that value and that trust over time, is have these small wins where you can make immediate value and immediate impact and then grow it long-term.
I absolutely love that answer. It builds on something that we've heard and I just talked about, is you recognize that someone else could do something better than you, right? And so you partnered, and Isabella, maybe to you, in terms of how you think about which banks you partner with and how you think about those partnerships. And then even once you're partnering, what else can we do? What can we build together? Because banks bring, each individual bank brings their own technology stack, right, with different capabilities. So how do you think about those partnerships and then sort of, like I said, building on the relationships to keep doing even more?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the payments world, there's so much like compliance burden and things like that that you have to worry about. And so I think definitely, especially if you want to maybe just try out a new feature and see if it's actually going to work out, relying on partnerships is huge. You know, at Plaid, I've had those moments where it's like, all right, should we launch this new payment rail or this new payment feature? And building in-house just does not make sense, especially when it's not core to our business. And so, I think you have to leverage partnerships in that case.
Okay, Christy, this, I guess, from Canopy's perspective and from, you know, when it comes to venture, it opens up a whole new world of opportunities in terms of what's being created and how do you think about what that has done maybe to the venture world in terms of there's now more and more partnerships, you're starting to see people work together. I think more, we talked about this on the last panel, you're seeing more fintech companies embrace the idea that they have to understand the regulatory infrastructure. How has that changed your world?
Yeah, I would say that I definitely agree with what you've said earlier in relation to, I think we can all agree that it's no longer a competition between the two. It's very much banks and fintechs have to work together, and it's very much more of a competition where really banks are bringing a lot of expertise in relation to risk, regulatory requirements, balance sheet strength, and fintechs are bringing kind of what they are good at, which is really UX, speed, innovation. And so having both parties bring the best of both worlds allows both parties to deliver the best outcomes for customers. And so you have kind of the trust layer and the UX layer come together to bring the best outcomes. And so we have a portfolio company called Fiserv, for example, that's partnered with RLP JP Morgan. And this is really about like meeting the customer where they are at. And so JP Morgan is embedding their payment rails, their treasury rails into ERP systems because they want to meet the treasurers where they are. And so this bank plus fintech co-opetition / partnership is, I think, very strong and very much what we see today.
So Isabella, I think rightfully, because I think it, you know, even though most people won't admit it, AI scares the hell out of a lot of us in terms of what it can do and the capabilities. But obviously there's a lot of good opportunity for venture who are, you know, sort of this is early in terms of the growth of AI. How do you think and how do you evaluate some of the companies, particularly as it relates to their engagement and their sort of inserting themselves into the bank fintech partnership to make it smoother and more efficient?
If anything, we think that partnerships is a very important go-to-market channel. for a lot of these fintechs and our role in the ecosystem. So I mentioned earlier, we have more than 70 banks as part of our investor base, which includes kind of the big banks like Goldman and JP Morgan, down to the more regional guys like M&T and Huntington, to the more community banks. And our the way that we see our role in the ecosystem is, let's connect fintechs with banks, banks with fintechs, so that both can really benefit. And as a factor of that, the more partnerships that you actually have in place, the stronger your go-to-market is, aside from just being direct or indirect. And so that's very...
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130。
Much a strength that we like to leverage and that we bring strategic value to.
Isabella, again, going back to the theme at which we started, sort of, is it one or the other? I remember we, you know, speak on so many panels and we participate in so many forums, the concept of should you build, buy, or partner, right? It used to be, again, a choice. Should I build, buy, or partner? More and more, as you have just illustrated, you're doing all three, right? You're trying to figure out where the strategic points are. Has that made it harder or easier in terms of how you continue to think about your own growth?
I mean, I think it's there are three options that you can pull from at, like, strategically and more of a life cycle, I would say. So it's like, again, maybe you're launching a new feature and you just want to be experimental, so you partner initially, and then over time you revisit, and maybe it is something that you want to build in-house, especially if it's proprietary. I know, especially also in the age of AI, there's maybe worries about around partnering with a company and like access to your data and things like that. So yeah, I think they're all three options that you can pull from to be the most, you know, optimized, and you have to kind of revisit occasionally to see if you need to make changes.
Karash, let me ask you again, you have to evaluate partners all the time, right? It's nonstop. You know, do you look at a partner comes through the front door, pitches you this? Do you often then say, hey, maybe this is something we could do on our own? Like, how do you think about sort of your expansion in terms of the work that you're doing or the capabilities that you have?
I think my strategy has been, let's keep this theme of AI, right? Let's just take agentic commerce. Do I think, and this is my personal opinion, not the banks, but do I really think financial institutions are going to be leading the way for agentic commerce? No, we're not. And so I think we have to have, and it's kind of a realistic discussion I think we need to have with each other, and kind of a cultural change of what are we good at and what are we not good at? What are we going to be leading the change with and what not? Like, again, I don't think financial institutions are going to be leading this arm in agentic commerce. I think maybe payment processors will, or other players, but we need to partner and collaborate to make sure we're meeting the customers where they are. And, this is why actually I'm under this umbrella of embedded payments, right? I fundamentally believe that the future of finance, right, and financial services is going to be embedded payments, right, and embedded finance. And it's taking our financial services and embedding it into where the customer is. So just with agentic commerce, it's like we need to find how we can take our services and embed it into these platforms. Because ultimately, that to me is where we're all headed, right? Why are we trying to push people to our platforms when we can meet them where they are?
Isabella, let me ask, you know, we talk about the benefits of partnerships, but obviously there's no benefit without a little bit of risk. And so maybe what is it have you learned as you've partnered with, you know, multiple institutions over the years and that has continued to grow? What are some of the risks that maybe have gone away and maybe some of the risks that have increased?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of risks. I think one that comes up a lot at Plaid, because we kind of touch all the ecosystem, and Plaid also isn't just an open banking platform anymore. We've kind of gone into like payments, credit, fraud, all of that. So there's a risk of competition, which you're always kind of dealing with, but I think that's just something that you manage on an ongoing basis. But something that I deal with a lot and is a more common risk is just partnerships that you don't receive value out of. Like we get super excited about signing a logo, we all are cheering, and then in the end, it's really hard to derive value from it if it wasn't set up properly. So I think that's the biggest risk that you have to mitigate, and you have to mitigate it through, you know, I mean, it starts with like good commercial terms, it starts with good scoping, good understanding of the problem that you're trying to solve, kind of setting up all of those things, and then good ongoing maintenance as well.
So I'm going to stay with you for a second on that, because I think that's a great point. at what point do you make the determination it's just not working? Because I think we all see it the same way. Big love,
yeah.
Big announcement, a lot of LinkedIn love,
mm-hmm.
and then you find internally it just doesn't work.
Well, I think if you're continuously like measuring the ROI that you're getting out of it and it's like too much cost and not enough value, then you have to make that call. So I think, yeah, I mean, in as far as like details, obviously it's like maybe contract is up for renewal and you're like, is this worthwhile? And so in that case, sometimes you just have to walk away. Yeah.
Christy, has the increase in willingness and desire to partner made it harder to do what you do in terms of finding those companies? Because is it, you know, are you finding that those companies, or maybe there's more competition amongst the banks who are going to scoop up companies or acquire companies? Has it created more opportunities and more challenges from the VC side?
I would say definitely more opportunities. The collaboration between the two, I think, can be really strong and result in very good outcomes. That it's very much more of a positive than a negative. When we think about advising some of our banks in relation to should you build, partner, buy, it's, I think it really comes down to, you know, you should build when you want differentiation, you should buy when you want acceleration, and then you should partner when you want optionality. And
practice that before.
I have, yeah. Yeah. I've said this many, many times across many calls with banks. And so with when you think about it from that framework, I think the partnership route becomes very attractive because many times you need to make decisions with speed while not knowing what is going to happen in the market, especially with AI these days, and everything is moving so quickly that if you go down the partnership route, that can, you know, lead to benefits as well as potential risks. But a lot of the times you learn more from the process than not.
Isabella, let me ask you, obviously every bank or every partner comes with their own different set of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Is it easier when a bank comes with the solutions to solve for some of the problems? Or do you prefer, you know, a bank that doesn't have anything and you get to go in and sort of put your own systems in place and start from the beginning?
I think, well, in this current moment, I'm more interested in banks that have a solution they can offer me that's more complete. I think also with anything banking related, like compliance is a huge focus as far as the impact of how that, well, the impact of compliance and just like day-to-day operations of Plaid. But yeah, I think something turnkey is better currently. Yeah.
So do you find, again, let's take it from the fintech side maybe for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that somebody who comes in with a bit more experience makes the opportunity and the partnership a bit stronger?
Yes and no. I mean, I think yes, generally, but there are obviously like smaller fintechs that are still really nimble and can provide a lot of value. So it just depends on the fintech. Yeah.
Karash, again, similar, you know, where do you fall in terms of, I say this maybe from your perspective, right? Your technological capabilities and then your abilities to maybe integrate new technologies. Where's the sweet spot? Is there a sweet spot, or do you evaluate everybody a bit differently?
I think sometimes it brings a fresh perspective, right? It's like they ask questions, people who aren't experienced in like a certain area, they ask questions that make us rethink, oh yeah, why do we do that, right? And it makes us rethink processes. And I've actually iterated so many different processes within the bank because a partner has come in and it's, I love that fresh, and it's probably why I live vicariously through the fintechs I partner with. But I like that learning. I like that innovation. But when it comes to kind of compliance, and do you have the expertise and do you have the domain expertise? You better bet that you have that, right? Because if, you know, shit hits the fan, you better know what you have to do. You have to make sure you have the right protocols in place. You have the right backstops in place. Like we're trusting, it's a marriage, right? It's a partnership. So we need to make sure that you're adhering to the requirements we put on, and we're under regulatory scrutiny. So you have to live up to those as well. So from that aspect, yes, I want someone very experienced, but if you're not experienced, you need to at least show a proven model that you know how to handle those compliance requirements. And show that you're serious about it, right?
So on that, can you talk about the evolution? Because you've been doing this for a bit, right? And you've had a front row seat to sort of some of the ups and unfortunately some of the downs through our industry. Can you talk for a moment in terms of what makes a good partnership?
Yeah.
And how do you think about and evaluate that?
I'm going to actually flip this on its head. I think we should talk about both the successes and the unsuccessful situations. I think successes is what you might also, you know, we've all heard. It's like the trust, you know, the aligned interest, the, you know, delineation of like the shared responsibilities. I think that's all great. Now the good stuff, the unsuccessful stuff. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus. This is what I've noticed in market. The first and foremost is I think two parties shouldn't come with hidden agendas. Same with a marriage, right? Come with your pure intentions and be transparent about that, right? Because I've seen situations where, and I've seen it on both sides, right? A bank might want a logo, right? They might want to just post something on LinkedIn and might partner with someone. That's not very fruitful if the other side doesn't know that. And on the other side, if a fintech's coming to a bank and all they want is distribution, and, you know, like 1 month in, they're like, okay, where's the 10 leads that, you know, I need every month? It's like, that's also not helpful. Like, it's this quote out of like the Notebook, right? Like, what do you want? Like, you have to be very transparent what you want up front. I think the other thing is compliance. Like I mentioned it before. It's like you need to display, like now we saw it with AI, this conference, like you can make a website in 8 minutes, right? You can make a nice demo. That's all good. Like I love user experience and customer experience. That is important. But if you can't back up the compliance behind that, can you explain to me what KYB is, what your AML policies are, how you're equipping? Like that's the stuff I really look for. And that's the stuff that I think makes or breaks a partnership. And then last thing, I don't think this is talked about enough, and it's kind of a taboo topic, but it's perception, right? What is the internal and external perception? If you have someone that comes in and is trying to be competitive, that's not going to resonate with your sales teams. If they come in too salesy, then our sales teams are going to, and marketing teams are going to think, well, hey, are we just an extension of this fintech sales teams? No, we're not. So you can have a leader championing a partnership, but if you don't have that internal support, you're dead in the water, right? You're not going to get far.
I love what you're saying, and more importantly, the energy in which you're saying it, and I truly appreciate that. Let me just ask you one more question.
Sure.
Have you seen fintechs getting smarter when it comes to compliance? I know I talk about it a lot in terms of the increase of regulatory and compliance understanding from fintechs, but are you seeing that firsthand, or do you still see people coming through the front door?
Of course. And I don't think you can ignore it. And unfortunately, we've seen certain situations, and I think this is really specific to fintech. If you don't have a strong compliance program, we can see that your whole company can blow up overnight. And so I think compliance is now used as an advantage. And I don't know if you view it differently, but when you're diligence companies, like you want to make a solid investment in them. Same with the bank. They want to make a solid investment. That's protecting your company, right? From something blowing up. And that sensitivity, I think really exists really in the fintech space because something can go wrong and you're done and you need to protect. It's a moat. It's a competitive moat.
Christy?
Yes.
I'd love for you to, is he right? Do you look at that now?
Oh, absolutely.
We'll put it right out there, you know?
No, absolutely.
He's wrong too, by the way.
No, absolutely. Especially in financial services and highly regulated industries, compliance, regulatory risk is just always top of mind for anything that our companies are doing. And so, one of our founders actually was the former head of the OCC under President Clinton. And so that's one of the strengths that we provide and the differentiators that we provide and why a lot of startups and fintechs want to work with us because of that kind of regulatory and compliance aspect. It's probably a topic that comes up every single call whenever we have
one. Before joining the American Fintech Council, I had the opportunity to work at Cross River. And, we used to think about compliance as a competitive advantage. And those who wanted to embrace it, we recognize as a solid partner. They want to understand it. Those who said, it's going to take too long or it's going to be too hard to onboard, that was probably a good opportunity for us to walk away and say, we probably don't want to work with you. Isabella, I'm going to turn this to you now because you're coming from the fintech side, right?
And yeah.
I will say Plaid puts their money where their mouth is, right? You don't just talk about sort of your investment, but I see it firsthand in Washington about open banking, and you guys are really on the front lines when it comes to regulatory compliance. But talk to me about how you guys have thought about that maybe in the time that you've there and what you've heard before. Was the company built in that way, or is that something you've just learned and continue to evolve into?
I think, yes, it was kind of built that way. Like, we had a strong compliance function in the beginning of me working at Plaid, but it's gotten stronger. For where I'm at in the business, I'm in the payment side, so you have to have a compliance function to support that. And
When I was first, like, this is my second role at Plaid. The first time around, we did not really have that. And so we had to build it all out. And so I'm definitely impressed with the, you know, strides that we've made in that way. I would also, to kind of echo Karush, in my last role, which was at a different company, I was at a fraud and compliance company called Sardine. I worked with a lot of fintechs and banks, and it was crazy to see some of the fintechs that would come through the way that they were managing compliance. It was very alarming. And so, yeah, hopefully they're getting better at that. But to your point of being able to tell whether a company is risky or not, you can tell immediately by how they're handling that.
Okay, so let's just shift for a second in terms of operational, right? In terms of, you know, you understand that partnerships potentially are the pathway to success from the fintech or the banking side. But how do you think about sort of operationalizing in terms of who maintains that relationship? You know, is it sort of, you know, a single person? Is it spread across? How do you think about your relationship management? Because partnership, I mean, you know, we often joke in the trade association world, our entire job is relationships, right? That's what we do for a living. Your jobs are not that much different as we've now expanded in the partnership world. You know, maybe Isabella will stay with you to start this.
Yeah.
How do you think about those relationships? You know, in the role that you do, you sort of build a relationship with the financial institution. Is that now yours to own? How do you think about it in terms of making sure that it stays positive and successful and productive?
Yeah, well, it's mine to own, but there's a lot of other stakeholders that it impacts. So it's honestly something where I need cohesion amongst many different parts of my organization alongside the bank that I'm working with. So, you know, we're onboarding customers, but we're also to some degree at the mercy of our sponsor bank. So we need to have good relationships with them. They need to trust us and trust the program that we put in place. And so it's definitely, I have the ownership, but there's a lot of other impact with other folks internally, and we need to be building those relationships.
Karush, how do you guys manage that from the bank side?
I think what Phil's asking is, like, why do you have a job? I know this is a performance review. Usually it happens in January, but I guess we're all in the hot seat today. it can't be one person. It's impossible for it to be just one person. And I kind of referred to this earlier, but it needs to be a cultural mind shift. And it needs to start from the top and trickle down to the bottom. And as Isabella was saying, like, you need every single function directed toward and bought into this vision, right? I've been in situations of that.
请关注公众号,思维纪要社,更多纪要请加V,CN2021-0130.
Where it's like, I'm the only one championing this. And it's like, I need to get support from a sales team, from legal, from compliance. And you're oftentimes borrowing resources, right? So you need to somehow influence them to get on board with this vision. And so if the top isn't aligned there, then you're kind of dead in the water. I will also say, now in this day and age, with how fast technology is moving, if you don't have one person managing all these different, you know, horizontal opportunities, they're just one-off. They're not part of your core strategy. And so I think you're doing a disservice, honestly, to not only your investors, but most importantly, your customers, if you don't have someone centralized in this function, advocating and pushing it with the right executive support as well.
I love that answer. Christy, let me ask you this, and it came something that came up before, and you and I didn't talk about this, so I'm sorry if I'm putting you in the hot seat, but it seems to be sort of the theme of the last couple of minutes.
Yep.
How do you think about evaluating technology from the question of relationship management and building? Meaning there are some people who come through your front door who you recognize instantly that they are really smart. They're building something that is just amazing. But there's no way they're going to ever partner with anybody because they can't build a meaningful relationship and
right.
figure out how to make that connectivity. Right. How much does that weigh into how you evaluate investment?
It actually matters a lot because one of the key things that we are looking for when we partner with companies that will eventually become our portfolio companies is team. And our capital is basically backing the management team, the founding team, to be able to lead this company in various directions, not knowing what the market is going to bring and how the economic cycles are going to turn. And so the management team, if anything, is the most important part of this. And you obviously have different flavors of, you have more technical folks, you have more, you know, go-to-market focused founders, et cetera. But really at the end of the day, it's what matters most to us, backing the right people and partnering with the right people.
Okay. I feel like no good panel can ever end without sort of looking at what maybe the future holds. And I always, it's so funny because, you know, well, what's going to be in 5 years? I can barely tell you what's going to be in 5 minutes, let alone 5 years. Isabella, like, again, try to turn politics off for a second, kind of from when it comes to simply building infrastructure, creating partnerships, ultimately providing value for the end consumer. What do you imagine or what do you predict maybe for the next 6 months, maybe a year?
It's hard to say. I mean, something AI related, if I had to, that would be my guess. I mean, I think there's going to be more, merging of like FI versus fintech. I feel even when I was looking at the questions, I was kind of reflecting on that and thinking about when I started at Plaid, the concept of FI versus fintech versus where that's at now. And I feel like it's very layered into one now. So there will probably be more of that, more like consolidation and then more optimization through AI. That would be my answer.
Karash?
I think generally, like, most banks have now accepted fintechs. Maybe some are still holding out. I don't know. But I think there's, like, that paradigm has maybe shifted. And I think, and I mentioned it before, I think the future is going to be how we embed financial services into existing platforms. And we've been seeing that over the course of the last few years. I think what I'm really excited about is agentic commerce. And how can you have a bank's API embedded in the LLM or an agentic model? I think that to me is what we're going to be seeing in the next few years. And you can always just look, you know, from a bank's perspective, what are the fintechs doing? Because they're kind of leading that way. So you can see some fintechs already doing that. So I think banks will follow.
Christy?
I actually spend a lot of my time in AI and financial services. And I run a survey across our banks asking them, you know, XYZ question about AI. And the biggest takeaway from this year relative to last year is that they are implementing AI across the board. And so whereas a year ago it was more POCs, exploratory phases, now it's like it's here and it's real and people want to do it. And so I think that's just going to continue the next couple months.
Well, really exciting. Again, getting to hear from those who are on the front lines, building the partnerships, really building the future of finance. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you, Phil.